Hello and welcome to The Headquarters, the official podcast of RaptorsHQ.com. I'm your host, Sean Woodley, and this week I'm joined from the beautiful, booming metropolis of Dauphin, Manitoba, correct? It's John Godis. How are you, man?
Yeah, I'm in the Prairie Mountain Inn in Dauphin, Manitoba, so taking the show on the road.
What on earth are you doing in Dauphin, Manitoba?
Well, I work in agriculture full-time, as listeners to the podcast may have remembered from shows long ago. So we have a couple meetings out in the boonies over the next 2 days, and yeah, I'm on my backup mic here. So Dauphin's bigger than I thought it was. It's just north of Riding Mountain National Park, about 4 hours from Winnipeg, but it's still, you know, still tough times. I'm in a really small hotel room.
Fair enough. Is there any like nightlife there?
Well, funny you should say that. They almost everything is booked up because the Brandon Weed Kings are in town.
Oh. Why are they
in
town?
I'm not kidding. Our entire motel is booked. The Super 8 next door is booked solid. The restaurant that we went to for dinner is completely full. The Brandon Weed Kings are like a huge deal.
Why are the Brandon
Weed
Kings
NHL alumni?
Why are they in Dauphin though?
I don't know exactly. We can figure that out. I think they're playing a not dissimilar to how the Raptors might play a game in Vancouver during the preseason.
Okay.
It's kind of like giving other people an opportunity to see this beloved hockey team.
Right. Well, we have a beloved basketball team we could talk about, as you mentioned, the Raptors there. Raptors are
just keep the Brandon Wheat Kings.
No, I'm good. I'm all set. I don't need to talk about Jordan Tutu's junior hockey team anymore. That's where he played, right? Brandon Wheat Kings? He might have played for the Medicine Hat Tigers. I don't know. Either way. We got a lot of stuff to get to in this episode. The Raptors are on a nice little win streak here. 6 in a row without Kyle Lowry. It's pretty awesome. They are 3 games out of first place in the Eastern Conference. Dare to dream, John. They're a half game out of third. They are, and they're the first place team now is Boston. So the whole standings thing is, of course, what everyone wants to talk about. I've tried to impose a hiatus on talking about the standings, but it seems to be impossible. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to get into DeMar DeRozan's All-NBA case and sort of him versus Isaiah Thomas and all that stuff. And so I had a tweet today that Boston fans really, really seem to enjoy. So we'll get into that. We have a really fun thing we're going to get to as well. Mitch Robson, our lovely child who writes for the site, provides us good child labor. He is compiling a bracket of the worst Raptors of all time as a sort of counter to Sportsnet's best Raptor of all time or favorite Raptor of all time thing. So we're going to go through the guard region, which has not yet posted on the website. It'll be up tomorrow, I think, but we're going to give you a little sneak peek to the guard region, and we're going to go through that. And we'll next week we'll probably update with the rest of the regions and everything as well. So I'll give you a sneak peek on that. Lots of other stuff to get to, so we'll get things going here on The Headquarters. Okay, welcome back to The Headquarters. Sean Woodley here with John Godis from his hotel room in Dauphin, Manitoba. What's that?
It sounds so sad.
Well, I mean, is there at least like a mini bar with drinks and stuff you can get out of there?
No.
That's disappointing. I'm currently drinking.
It's Dauphin, man. It's Dauphin.
I'm currently drinking my favorite beer in the world, a very nice seasonal brew by Great Lakes Brewery, Octopus Wants to Fight IPA. It is a fantastic beverage, and when it comes out, it is literally my version of pumpkin spice season. I feel like a nice white girl when it's out, so that's what I got. Sorry to rub it in. Anyway, let's get into the Raptors. The Raptors are doing stuff. Again, 6 in a row without Kyle Lowry. Pretty incredible, considering like I think the expectations for were going to be for what this team was going to be. They're 12-5 without Lowry now. They have, you know, more than, you know, maintained the pace, more than tread water. They have done a lot better than I think most people expected. And I don't know, we kind of exhausted the entire thing with the Raptors last week and like what they've been doing without Lowry, because they were still playing pretty well back then. Any new observations from the last week that you'd like to bring to light? Because I don't know, they've kind of been the same. There's not really a whole lot to learn from this team anymore, I don't think. We're just kind of waiting for Lowry to get back, and I don't really know when that's going to be. his thing with ESPN yesterday was weird, where he just didn't say anything whatsoever. That's what the Raptors do, though. They don't really share much about injuries. But anything new come to light for you over the last little while? Anything that's caught your attention?
I mean, it was a pretty boring week, to be honest. Like, Miami, Dallas, Orlando is not going to light up your mood on any given night. So, I mean, the Miami game was important, I think, because they had lost to that team a couple weeks ago, and they were able to D up in that game after kind of getting outworked. So Miami's been outworking a lot of teams, but they've kind of fallen off a little bit. So that was probably the most reassuring win. I didn't watch the Dallas game, but I understand it was more of the same as far as the defense goes. And then Orlando, I think, was the letdown game without having a loss, which is big. I mean, earlier in the year, they had a lot of those where the defense would just be non-existent and they just kind of go through the motions and score points. And they came back to that for the first time since the All-Star break, pretty much. And still, I mean, they're so much better than Orlando that it didn't really matter. Yeah. And I mean, going forward, it looks like it should be more of the same. I mean, on the schedule, you know, Indiana's a little worrisome on Friday, but on Friday and then the following Tuesday. But other than that, I mean, I can't see them really losing any of these games, including the finisher at Cleveland.
Yeah, that game is going to be super interesting because there's the doomsday scenario. As Eric Kareen has pointed out, and as Daniel Reynolds has called it, the Kareen corollary, I think is what he said. I think it's what he called it. That if the Raptors are in that final game against the Cavs, there's the potential that the Cavs need to win to get the one seed and the Raptors need to win to get the three seed, and eventually it won't matter at all and the Raptors will be playing the Cavs in round two anyway. And maybe that's what we can get into here. The Cavs fell into the second seed last night after a really bad loss to the San Antonio Spurs. I don't know what to make of what the Cavs have been over the last little while. Their defense has been awful. They have the second worst defense since the All-Star break. And you look up and down their roster, there's not a ton of crazy defensive stoppers there. I mean, Tristan Thompson has that ability, I think, when he's going a full force. LeBron, obviously, is an amazing defender when he wants to key in. And J.R. Smith's been really good over the last little while. But, if you're relying on those three guys as your, top three defenders, that's a little troublesome considering the drop-off that you get, you know, from the rest of the roster when you have, you know, Kyrie Irving or Kevin Love or Kyle Korver as, you know, your backups or your other starters, where, you know, there just isn't a whole lot of shutdown potential on this team. And they're really good when they go five out and they score a ton of points just with, you know, Channing Fry at the five. But again, Fry isn't defending anybody. Richard Jefferson's not defending anybody. It's not a scary defensive team. What do you make of the defensive struggles they've had? And, are you at all sort of looking at them as vulnerable? Because I still kind of am going back to, it's probably going to be the Cavs that get out of the East. They're the most talented. They have LeBron. LeBron's done it 6 years in a row. Until he doesn't, I'm not going to pick against him because that seems really stupid. But I don't know. Is there any part of you that thinks they might be more vulnerable than they have been in the past?
Yeah, I mean, everyone keeps comparing them to the 2001 Lakers, where they just kind of sleptwalked through the season and went on the best tear of all time in the playoffs. But I don't think it's really that fair of a comparison. It's kind of short-sighted to say that, because the Lakers didn't go through anything like this as far as, you know, a combination of apathy and just not having the players to play good defense. You're right, the talent doesn't scream out at you that this team can defend. I mean, mostly it's the same core that did so in the finals last year and throughout the playoffs to stop the East. And I think it's just a matter of when Cleveland flips that switch, which we know they're going to, either before the playoffs or when the playoffs come around, where does that switch take them to?
Yeah.
Because last year they had that kind of warm-up series with Detroit where they were able to get a lather going against, you know, a little bit of a chippy team and a good matchup for them. And after that, it was smooth sailing. I mean, they got, you know, they wiped the floor with Atlanta. They, you know, had two games where they kind of let the Raptors win, and they got to the finals pretty easily. So I think it's just a matter of where this switch is going to take them. I'm a little concerned, and concerned meaning that I'm concerned for them to not to continue playing defense, but I don't really want them to. But I mean, these are fixable things, but it's just a matter of where effort's going to take them.
Yeah, and as it stands right now, the Raptors have the dream scenario. If the Cavs stay in the two seed, which who knows if they will, Boston obviously has an easy schedule to finish up the season, and they seem very sort of hell-bent on getting that one seed and trying very hard to get it. I don't know, like, this is sort of the dream scenario for Raptors fans that they've been hoping for all year, that if the Raptors come fourth, like, and the Cavs slip to second, they avoid the Cavs to the Eastern Conference Finals. But you, sir, are working on a piece about why it might not be the worst thing to come across the Cavs in the second round. Make your case. Like, why does that not bother you? Because I'm coming around on it as it not really bothering me either. And, like, I just think this whole season is about being measured against the Cavs anyway, so it doesn't really matter when you play them. Yes, the optics of getting to the Eastern Conference Finals are a lot nicer and more fun, and you get more playoff games and gate revenue and all that fun stuff, and more Jurassic Park games, but I don't know. Like, it doesn't really matter to me, but what's your argument for why it doesn't really matter?
Yeah, I mean, there's the argument is just that it doesn't really matter. I mean, you want to play them early because they're likely going to have that warm-up series. But I think the road for them, if they're in the two seed, is a lot more difficult this year than it would have been last year. Because last year, the Raptors were their major the major obstacle that they had to overcome, and the Raptors weren't as good of a defensive team last year as they are this year. See, I mean, you look at what Cleveland would have to go through in the first round. I mean, the Pacers are typically, you know, a good defensive team. They could wear them down. The Heat are a really energetic team, and I think would give them some challenges. And if the Bucks fall down, they would be a good matchup. They've been a good matchup for the Cavaliers for the last 2 years. So that first round might not be the warm-up series that it was last year against Detroit. And then it's a matter of you want to play them before they get going. It's going to take them some time to flip a switch. I mean, all these guys are disengaged. It's not just a matter of, you know, injuries or, you know, LeBron deciding that he wants to play well and everybody needs to come with them. Everybody needs to lift up their games, and it's not going to be something that takes two or three games. It's going to take some time. So I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world if they played them in the second round as opposed to giving them time against, you know, a Wizards team that isn't defending that well. That would give the Cavs an opportunity to get things going on both ends. I think the Raptors would be better suited because they can D up a little bit better.
Yeah, for sure. And the Wizards, actually, their defense has really slipped off. I think they're bordering on bottom 10 as well right now, which that's never a good sign. Like, where the Raptors are trending right now, I mean, everyone wants to have the team that's sort of trending into the playoffs. And, like, I don't know if that means a whole lot. I'm not sure the momentum thing really carries any weight. And, like, I think there are teams that can just switch it on for the playoffs and be totally fine. And I think the Cavs are definitely one of those teams. But, yeah, like, if they come across them in the second round, maybe you get still a little bit of, you know, they're still ironing out the kinks with the defense. But I still think either way, like, the Raptors are better suited to go up against the Cavs this year anyway. I think the sort of versatility they have, I think, you know, last season what killed the Raptors was they couldn't do anything when the Cavs decided to go with Channing Frye at the five or Kevin Love at the five, and they just spread them out with five shooters. The Raptors had nothing to do to go against that. They had no move to counter that, and it was a checkmate every single time. Whereas now, like, they have Ibaka to play at the five. They can play Patterson at the five if they want to go super small. They can play, you know, PJ Tucker's been awesome at the four. He's been rebounding his ass off, which is huge if you're going to go small. Damari Carroll, people have been really down on Damari Carroll. We can get into this as well because it's kind of bothering me. But, like, Damari Carroll's been good defensively lately, too, and he provides a lot of switching against with PJ Tucker and Ibaka in those lineups. And Tucker has talked about how much he enjoys playing with that lineup because they're so switchy and so smart and so communicative. They talk a lot on defense, but they, yeah, so that's like, that's an encouraging thing. And so I think either way, whenever the Raptors were to come, if they do come across Cleveland, whenever it happens, like, I think just the way that they've improved the defense and just the pieces they have now make them a lot more of a potent matchup for them. I think, you know, the offense can keep up with them as well. Like, once Kyle Lowry's back, hopefully by the second or third round, his shooting is back into form. Like, we have no idea. And again, there's still no update when he's going to be back, but you would hope that, once he's back, like, the shooting there, like, the offense should be able to get back to that sort of top five-ish range that it was in before Lowry went down and before Ibaka and Tucker even got here. I mean, you'd figure with Ibaka, the offense will be even that much more deadly with what Lowry and DeRozan have been doing, working out of traps and working out of extra attention this year and just having that outlet to go to, who doesn't really seem capable of missing at this point. So that's... I just think all the signs point to the Raptors being better suited to play the Cavs no matter what round they come across them in. Obviously, it'd be nice. I want to see the Raptors play Boston. I really, really want that series, and it'd be disappointing if we don't get it. But again, like, the Cavs, if they're going to fall, if there's been a time over the last 7 years where LeBron has looked vulnerable, this probably is the year, and it's nice that the Raptors made these moves to sort of maximize their roster to take advantage of it. Like, this is what this is about. This is what the Raptors' whole ethos is about right now, I think, and what it should be going forward. You know, you talk about the Kevin O'Connor piece that came out yesterday that sort of, you know, talked about the idea of blowing the team up, and I think doing so would, you know, cut into the ability of the team to be in this sort of conversation where maybe they're not true contenders in the purest sense of the word, but are in a sort of position where with a move of the deadline or with some luck, they could overcome a Cavs team and squeak into a finals. And then you prolong that window longer by not blowing it up right now. But I just think it's nice that they've done these moves this year, and that hopefully Lowry gets back and they're ready to sort of, you know, give the Cavs their best shot, because I think it will definitely be a better shot than they gave them last year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're right in all those points. They're better suited to play them. I think, you know, even if it stays the way it is today, seeing the Cavaliers play the Wizards in the second round, I think that would be good, you know, for the Raptors too. I just think the road is a lot more difficult for Cleveland this year because the top three teams around them in the East are much improved from where they were last year.
Yeah.
So it won't be easy for them. And, you know, going back to that Lakers comparison, they just don't have, you know, a dominant player who can get them through games, kind of like Shaq did. LeBron and Kyrie can score the ball, but they still need some sort of defensive presence and role players to step up. And they've lost Bogut. Tristan Thompson's play has fell off, and the interior is looking a little very vulnerable for them right now. So the road is not easy for Cleveland, no matter who they play. And I think there's reason to feel good about the Raptors and not to worry necessarily if they get up to three or even further than that. I mean, they still have potential, depending on how Cleveland plays, to move up into two. It's all fluid right now, but we just don't know.
Yeah, that'd be wild. Yeah, this is why it's so ridiculous to look at the Eastern Conference standings and like trying to figure out what it's going to be, because like I've had questions on the Locked On show like, oh, what's the best matchup for the Raptors? What do you think is the most likely? And it's like, I don't have no idea. Like, there are like four or five teams it could be against in the first round, or I guess four, I suppose, if you consider the Heat capable of moving up. But like, I don't know. It's really hard to say right now. So there's no sense in wasting breath talking about playoff matchups that are totally hypothetical, because we have no freaking clue what it's going to look like.
Yeah, and the Raptors still have to win a first-round series, too. And who knows? Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot of talent in those bottom four teams, but the Bucks have reason to make you nervous. The Pacers have Paul George, so nothing's a given, that's for sure. I'm gonna say, though, that Boston does finish with the one seed. I think they've just shown that they're way too good against really bad teams, and they only play really bad teams from here on out. So I think they'll probably finish number one.
Speaking of Boston, today I tweeted a thing, and Michael Pina from Bleacher Report retweeted it, and I just knew there were going to be Celtics fans who got angry and got into my mentions. And my tweet was partly tongue-in-cheek, but I also think I actually believe it. And I said that, you know, I think it's comforting knowing that the Raptors would have the two best players in a series against Boston. You know, obviously DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry. I do think both of them are more effective players than Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah's had a great season, and it's been a lot of fun to watch him do things while being very small. But I just think come playoff time, like that, I really do think that the Boston offense is going to have its sort of head chopped off, because teams are going to really key in on Isaiah Thomas. What do you think about my very stupid and trolly tweet?
Well, I mean, I think Isaiah Thomas is more of a net positive on offense for Boston than DeRozan is for the Raptors, especially when Lowry is healthy. I think Thomas is a catalyst in the way that DeRozan isn't. Both guys can go get a bucket when you need them to, and I think Thomas is probably better for that. But, you know, this isn't like a 90s video game. Like, it's not just about scoring baskets. And I think you're right. Other teams are going to understand that they can go at Isaiah Thomas on defense, and it's not just a matter of effort like it is with DeRozan. It's the fact that he's 5'9", and he's not big enough. He doesn't put in a lot of effort on that end either, which doesn't help things, but they can't hide him, and the Celtics have benefited against bad teams. I mean, they don't play well against good teams. People have said they're the worst one seed of all time, and I tend to agree with that. Mm-hmm. They're just uncanny at winning games against teams worse than them. They're one of the best teams in history at winning winnable games, which is like the most Brad Stevens concept out there. and they pull it off. They really benefit from having a Marcus Smart next to Isaiah Thomas, who can be kind of like his goon squad. But again, you're right. In the playoffs, that doesn't fly.
Yeah, and I think DeRozan's sort of playmaking, it's really impressed me. Like since Lowry went down. Yeah, maybe he's not Isaiah Thomas in terms of just being a catalyst, but maybe the Raptors' offensive scheme kind of plays into that as well and doesn't create those opportunities as much. I just think DeRozan's a more impactful player overall than Isaiah Thomas is, and Thomas has been awesome this year. Again, I'm not disparaging him. I might be a little bit, but like I just think I really am not scared of a Raptors-Celtics series. Let's just put it that way. I'm terrified of a series against the Wizards. Like, get the Wizards the hell away from me, but... I'm not at all worried about a series against Boston because I just don't think they can hide Isaiah anywhere. And if he has any drop off offensively, I just don't think that team has much in terms of shot creation outside of him. Al Horford's a great passer, but someone's got to get him the ball, and I just don't know if they have that.
They need Avery Bradley to play out of his mind, I think, in the playoffs. And I think they're assuming he's going to, and he's played much better since coming back from injury.
Yeah.
But they really need him to be a ridiculously good two-way player, and he's a lot better than a lot of people give him credit for. If you watch the Celtics, he's a really important player for them.
Yeah,
definitely their third most important player on the floor. But you're right, he's going to need to do some creation and do some stuff maybe outside of what he's typically asked to do.
But this kind of ties into the All-NBA conversation, which has kind of cropped up of late, because DeRozan's been just lights out without Lowry. It's been truly impressive. He won Player of the Week again for the fourth time this season. It's been a really consistent year for him. He's won a Player of the Week in every month of the year so far, which is pretty outstanding for, you know, a guy who a lot of people were unsure a year ago of whether or not he should be, you know, given a max deal by the Raptors. So he's been awesome. And I think with Lowry missing the amount of time he has now with, 17 games he's been out with injury, it's going to be more than that. I think it's probably going to rule him out of an All-NBA spot. And I think I would have had Lowry in an All-NBA team, probably second team All-NBA next to Steph Curry before he went down. Since then, John Wall's been amazing. I think John Wall's probably the second team guy next to Curry. Obviously, Harden and Westbrook will be the first team guards. But the third team is up in the air. And you have, you know, probably Damian Lillard, you have DeMar DeRozan, you have Isaiah Thomas, Chris Paul as well. They're kind of fighting for those two spots. Is there anyone I've left off there that you think might get there? And, like, do you think the chances of DeRozan getting an All-NBA spot are reasonably high?
We'd have to run through some more names, I think, for me to really get a handle on it. So we're looking at point guards, shooting guards. Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Lowry's obviously omitted because of the injury. 13. So we're thinking that Lillard's off the table.
No, I think Lillard's I think it's Lillard, Paul, Thomas, and DeRozan for those two spots. I think. Like, I think Wall's a guarantee.
So who are we leaving off then? I guess you're removing Lowry. You're removing Kyrie.
I guess Kyrie could be in the mix for that as well. Like, but his defense is ass, I suppose. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're more than fair. Looking at the names that, you know, are not on this list, I don't think it's that ridiculous.
Yeah, so, yeah, if it's those two spots, you have Lillard, you have Paul, DeRozan, and Thomas, who gets the spots?
I was just looking at point guards. So, are you leaving Beal off?
Oh, Beal's in there, too. Yeah, I was just going point guards because there's just more good point guards. But it's two guard spots. It's not point guard, shooting guard. It's just... So, yeah, I guess Beal's in there, too.
Beal and Clay.
Yeah, I just don't think Clay will get the votes. It doesn't feel like a season has been loud, but that's probably just me being dumb. But yeah, it's tough. Like, there's probably five or six dudes who are deserving and are really, really good. I would probably rule out Lillard just because,
Portland... I think the Beal Rosen.
What's that?
Oh, no, go ahead.
I would say... I might just rule out Lillard because I think Portland, like, if they, whether they make the playoffs or not, they're going to be a sub-500 team that just barely got in. So I just don't think people will vote for him. He's kind of had a quiet year that no one's really paid attention to. Maybe that's the fault of people and not watching enough Portland games, but I don't think he feels like an All-NBA guy this year. Just like gut feel, like top of my head. I think Thomas is probably going to get the votes just because people like small people doing things and it's an exciting story and the Celtics have been really good. And it would be weird for the one seed in the Eastern Conference to not get an All-NBA guy, I guess. So I guess people will vote for him, even if I don't agree with it, because of his defensive liability. Or maybe I do. Like, his offense has been so good. So I would probably just go Thomas DeRozan. But the Beal thing is yeah, it's a good point. And Paul, it's really weird to leave him off an All-NBA team.
Yeah, it's tough. The guards, you know, you've lost a team because the two best players in the league are, you know, are guards. So it's pretty competitive for the other four spots. I think DeRozan has proved that he can lead this team in a small sample size. He's been an efficient scorer all year. And I think he's got a better argument in that regard than Beal does. Although, you know, Beal's been very impressive, I think, of late. You're right, it does feel weird to leave Chris Paul off, but I think I think Thomas and DeRozan is not outlandish.
Yeah. I mean, it's still far out. There's still like 8 games left for all this to seal up, and if DeRozan continues to do what he's done over the last, I think the last 4 games, he set a Raptors record for most points scored in a 4-game span, which is weird and arbitrary, but kind of cool. And if he continues this and like closes the season the way he started it with like 30-point games after 30-point games, maybe the voters will sort of give him the... And I mean, he got second in All-Star voting for Eastern Conference guards as well. So maybe people like what he's doing. Maybe people just love points. I don't know. Like, never underestimate how much people love points, I suppose.
Oh, people love stats. That's why Westbrook's going to win MVP.
No, he's not. I think Harden's going to win it.
I agree with you, but I think there's going to be a lot of people who vote for Westbrook just because triple-double sounds cool.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, it was weird. I was listening to the Simmons podcast with Klosterman this week, and like, I love those ones because I love it when someone who's smarter than Simmons is on with Simmons because they'll just call him out on his shit. Like the Malcolm Gladwell ones are good because Malcolm's just like, what are you doing? And then like Zach Lowe will call him out on his dumb basketball takes. And usually Klosterman's really good for that, but Klosterman was like full on the Westbrook train, and it was just like, this is kind of nonsensical, your arguments you're making here, but I like you. This is good.
That was weird. Where did you land on the which is weirder in sports conversation? The Super Bowl comeback or the rain delay after the 9th inning, Game 7 of the World Series?
Yeah, also a weird conversation. Probably the rain delay after the 9th inning just because of the drama that was there. But the Super Bowl comeback was so insane. I also forgot
what happened, and that game was just like... I don't even know. I was nuts, in another place emotionally during that.
Yeah, you're a Cubs fan, so I'd imagine you're probably biased in that. Just as a neutral observer who had no like stake in either of them, I think if you're going just on the unlikeliness, is it unlikely that there's going to be a rain delay in Cleveland in October? No. Is it unlikely that there's going to be a crazy-ass comeback, whether they're down 28-3 midway through the third quarter? Probably a lot more unlikely, I would suppose, if you're just going on that pure basis. That doesn't really make... It's not a really sensical argument, but... Oh,
yeah, they go weird places. I kind of like it. I haven't listened to one of their podcasts in a while, but yeah, it's a good combination.
Speaking of good combinations, wait.
Oh boy,
no, this was not a good segue at all. I had a better one. We were talking about guards, and then I lost it. Speaking of guards, we're gonna come back on the other side, and we're gonna get into a project that our pal Mitch Robson is working on. Where he's trying to rate find the worst Raptor of all time in bracket format because it is March and that's what you have to do. And he has started with his first region. It's going to post tomorrow. We're going to give you a little sneak peek and a spoiler of the names that are involved here. And we will get into that on the other side. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a second here on the headquarters. Okay, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley here with John Godis. Before we get into your questions, we're going to dive into the first of 4 regions in the Raptors HQ, worst Raptor of all time bracket, curated by our favorite child, Mitch Robson. And let's just roll through it here. He's got the guard region is ready to go. I think it's posting tomorrow morning. We're going to spoil it here. You might not even hear this till tomorrow anyway, so it'll probably be up. So we're just going to roll through the 4 matchups, and we'll kind of go back and forth on who we think is the worst Raptor. I'm kind of viewing this as like my least favorite Raptor of all time, as opposed to worst Raptor, because like there have been a lot of really bad players who have just not played a lot. And a lot of these guys, like the number 8 seed in the first matchup, is definitely worse than the number 1 seed. But the number 1 seed, I definitely would like hated a lot more. So we'll just do it that way, I think. That's how we'll approach this. Are you ready to go?
Yeah.
Okay. So, first matchup, the number one seed in the guard region is Mike James against the number eight, John Lucas III, whose tenure with the Raptors I really don't remember. Like, do you have anything with John Lucas?
Yeah, it was after his short stint as the best. You know how Tom Thibodeau kept turning backup point guards into superstars? He was like the shortest-lived version of that. And then he went to the Raptors, and he was awful.
Bulls curse, man. Just a different way of having the Bulls curse.
It's true.
Yeah. So yeah, Mike James, I think, is going to win this one on walk. I mean, James had the one season where I don't really know how to describe it. Like, what's like an equivalent of what Mike James did? Like, a guy who was never really that much of a scorer. Again, he never scored more than 12 points a game for the rest of his career. And he started 79 games. He averaged 20 points a game after going crazy in the final bit of the season to get to 20 points a game. And shot 47% from the field, 44% from three, and 83% from the line. And he, like, just an absurd sort of scoring run for a guy who was never really that good. Like, what would be the equivalent of that right now? Like, a guy in a contract year just trying to rack up. Like, would it be if, like, Patty Mills just hijacked the entire Spurs offense and just decided to go ham for, like, 2 months? But, like, I don't even know what the comparison would be.
Yeah, or like if the Lakers had kept Lou Williams and just like started him at point guard, that would kind of be the best thing, because he was like this old guy jacking it up on a team of, you know, young players who could actually benefit from getting the ball sometimes. Yeah, it was sad.
Yeah, it was a depressing time. So yeah, I think Mike James is going to win that. Do you have any devil's advocate pick for John Lucas?
I have no memory of anything he did with the Raptors. I just remember he was that backup on the Bulls.
Yeah. Next matchup here, I think, is going to be the first upset. At least I'm going to vote this way. It's number two, Milt Palacio, versus number seven, Marcus Banks. Milt Palacio was not a good player. I don't really remember much he did either. Like, he was just a really bad shooter. He was just kind of he was just a dude. Marcus Banks, though, was on the roster for, like, 4 years and, like, played, like, 31 games over those 4 years. And, like, just kind of was so bad that he could never break into those really bad Raptors teams. I don't know. Who do you have in this matchup? Because Milt Palacio is the number two, but I think Marcus Banks was, like, obviously worse. And I didn't really have any sort of vendetta against Milt Palacio.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything bad to say about him either. Although, it's kind of funny. The stats that Mitch has here, the 40% layoff in the mid range.
You're breaking up.
It's hilarious. I don't really care this one. I have no ill feelings towards either of these guys. So I'm gonna go with like a pick'em.
John, you're breaking up.
Hello?
Yeah, you're breaking up. Talk again?
Nope. I'm talking.
Okay, you sound a little better now. I think it figured itself out.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, it's starting to fill up here, so it's probably going to be, the internet's only going to get worse from here.
Right, okay. Well, yeah. What? Yeah, you broke up.
Is it okay now?
It was. It is now. It wasn't when you first asked, but it is now. Just see how, yeah. Just keep going, see how it works.
All right. I mean, I don't really have any ill feelings towards either Milt Palacio or Marcus Banks. The stats here are kind of funny for Palacio, that he only shot 16% from mid-range. So I'm gonna go with Palacio, just because that's hilarious.
Fair enough. Next one here, a guy who I don't know, Vincenzo Esposito versus Chris Childs. It's the number three versus the six. Esposito's the three, Childs is the sixth. So first of all, do you have any like recollection of Vincenzo Esposito? Because I guess he played very early on in the Raptors' time, so like I'm definitely too young to remember him, but do you have any sort of memories of what the hell he was?
No.
Okay.
I mean, this would be the perfect Russell Pedal question.
Yeah, no kidding. Or Dan Grant, yeah. It's, yeah.
We just plug their podcast again, I think.
Oh god, why would we do that? Listen to their podcast. Be the podcast. Do that. It's like a
we can just turn this into like a Chris Childs talk.
Yeah, again, I don't, like, Chris Childs, I vaguely remember. It was, like, right around the time I became a fan. Like, I think he was there in that 2000-2001 run, right, where they went to the second round. My best memory now of Chris Childs is when he was on the True Hoop podcast, like, a month ago. It was amazing. It was so, so fantastic. But, yeah, I don't really have a ton of recollection of Mr. Chris Childs. Like...
Yeah, he was pretty product of his time. Like, I watched a bit of that series again with Philadelphia, and I mean, if this was today, like, Del Curry would have gotten like all of those minutes. Like, he really wasn't that good.
Like, I've been thinking about this, like, since Kyle Lowry went down. Like, remember the days where Corey Joseph was like the prototype for the, you know, standard point guard in the NBA, where, like, yeah, he'll score like 12 points and get like 8 assists, like, if he's a starter, and that's like all you need from your point guard. And it's just like, now we have, like, Dennis Schroeder is, like, one of the worst starting point guards in the NBA, and he's averaging, like, 17 and 8. It's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good point. Like, Corey Joseph 10 years ago would have been a starting point guard on, like, half the teams in the league. I mean, he goes downhill, he doesn't shoot that much, and that's okay. We just have so many damn good point guards in the league now that, like, it's so, like, I was watching these games, and, like, Chris Childs, he couldn't really shoot. He was an okay defender. But he didn't do a lot for the team on offense, but they played him so much because he was tough.
Yeah, he was the classic early 2000s point guard, I think. So yeah, I would probably vote for Chris Childs here just because I don't have any idea who Vincenzo Esposito was. So that'd be my pick there. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, look at the numbers are here. Like, Childs shot 34% from the field as a Raptor, and he had as many turnovers as assists. And they had Del Curry on the bench, who's fathered two sons that are better than Chris Childs.
Oh, Chris Childs versus Seth Curry one-on-one game is something I don't ever want to see. All right, final matchup in the first round of the guard region. Jimmy King, number 4, versus number 5, Sean Respert. Again, I don't know who either of these dudes are, really. I think Respert has been a part of that random Raptors game before, but I'll go Jimmy King just because he was on the Fab Five and... that's it.
I don't know how anybody's expected to vote on this one, because I have no memories of either of them in a Raptors uniform.
Yeah, no. I'll vote Jimmy King, just because. Moving on to the second round. We have, Marcus Banks against, Mike James is just winning this whole thing. We don't have to go through this whole thing, right? Like, Mike James is winning this bracket.
Yeah.
Yeah. That season is one of the weird, like, I would read like a full oral history of Mike James's last 20 games in that season, just hijacking the entire team.
Oh man!
Oh my God!
Was that the year they made the playoffs too?
No, they were shit. It was the 2005-06 season. It was the year before they made the playoffs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was the year. Rafe Ralston was the guy that got traded for Mike James, I believe.
Right.
This team is really bad in NBA Live 06. I remember. It's a really bad team. It's like Joey Graham. It's Charlie Villanueva. It's a really, really bad team. Actually, no. TJ Ford might have been on that team by now. Either way. Really, really bad. Yeah. Want to just get to some questions here?
Let's do it.
Yeah, I can't talk about Marcus Banks or Chris Childs anymore. But please, as Mitch's bracket comes out, check it out. Have some fun with it and find the worst Raptor, most hateable Raptor of all time. I have to scroll through my mentions here to find the questions because I have a bunch of Celtics fans saying nonsense that I'm not going to respond to. All right, your first question here comes from Badanquad King, one of our favorites. From the Raptors, who would survive the longest in the Canadian wilderness? PJ Tucker, right? Maybe Jonas?
I mean, you can't really... what would be the second? I mean, that's really the real question. Who would be the second most likely?
Maybe Jonas?
Yeah.
Like,
that's not bad. I mean, he would scare the animals, that's for sure.
Yeah, he would just take up the spot of whatever bear is in the woods as the top of the food chain. And then,
just kind of, like, put his hands around the bear and then, like, jump awkwardly and go, like, ah!
He would,
look at the woods referee, calls a foul.
To knock down trees to build firewood, to get firewood, he would just, like, back the tree down in the post.
That's terrible.
Oh my god, I'm so trash. Anyway, so I think Jonas would be my pick, actually, because he's been in Canada longer, he's more aware, I don't know if there's like forests near Wasaga he's hung out in. I don't know, like bush parties or whatever.
yeah. This is my profession.
Yeah. Next question here comes from Dave Goodridge at Goodridge Dave. Is this extended time with Kojo running the team good for Casey's confidence to rest Kyle Lowry? I guess this is more towards next season. I guess this is probably aimed towards more next season because, yeah, Lowry's out right now. When he comes back, he ain't resting because he'll be gearing up for the playoffs, and the playoffs will be here. I think this probably is more towards next season if Corey Joseph's still on the team and Lowry's here. I don't personally think Corey Joseph's going to be on the team next year. I just think that it makes too much sense with DeLon Wright showing the signs he's shown for Corey to be moved somewhere else to get rid of his money. But I guess it could. I don't know. Like, again, the resting thing, people get really, really freaked out about resting guys, but like no one seems to be like asking for DeMar DeRozan to rest right now, and he's running himself into the ground for the team. And like they kind of need it. They absolutely need it. They need it to win games. So I don't know.
Yeah.
It's sort of weird. Like people pick and choose their times to be worried about rest, and I just kind of never worry about it.
I think the dynamic of the team changes so much too when Lowry's sitting. That, you know, it might seem like the team is staying afloat, but the offense changes with Lowry there and the defense changes. And I think that when the team is deferring to DeRozan to run the offense, that's just a totally different dynamic than when Lowry and DeRozan are both out there. So while it's good, period, I'm not necessarily sure that Dwayne Casey wants to do that in game where they're playing one way for 28 minutes and another way for 14, you know?
Yeah. I'm with you there. I don't think this is going to matter because I think Corey's probably gone this summer. I don't think the Raptors would be like excited to get rid of him. He's really kind of a nice ambassador for the team and all, but I just think it makes too much sense with DeLon Wright and Fred VanVleet on the roster. Either way, next question here comes from Badan Quad King again. Over easy or sunny side up?
Over easy.
Yeah, I'm with you. Sunny side up is disgusting. Like, what is it with this half-ass raw egg? No.
Yeah, there's too much room for error in a sunny side up egg.
Yeah, not about that life. I'm kind of partial to over medium. Like a nice sort of gooey but not too runny inside. I'm very much down with that too. Like, why must yolk be runny? I don't get it.
Yeah, it's just a challenge to make it like that. Like, there's no middle ground for me between over hard and over easy.
Okay, I've kind of mastered the over medium, but that's because that's how I like it, so I try it. I aim for that. Next question here comes from Edward S. Dot at Edward S. _ Dot. Your thoughts on the MVP race? No, we're not going to do that because John and I hate MVP talk. I think it's Kawhi or Harden are the deserving winners. And what's that?
I love the MVP talk.
No, I'm so. What's more tiresome to you, MVP talk or rest talk?
Rest talk, definitely, because there's no solution that talking about it is going to come about. Like, at least with the MVP, there's going to be somebody winning.
Yeah, that's fair. They both suck anyway. The other question from Edward though is: could DeMar be in the conversation for most improved player?
Typically they give the most improved to somebody who was close to a nobody and really made a splash this year. Like, Giannis is going to win. So, no.
That's the thing, right? Like, all season I've been looking at it as non-Giannis division for most improved. Like, DeMar has vastly improved his game, but Giannis has become a terrifying monster.
Yeah.
Next question here comes from Badan Quad King as well. Chappelle Show or Key and Peele? Have you watched Chappelle's specials yet?
I have, yeah, it's good.
I haven't yet. I gotta check them out. But I think I just watched more Key and Peele, but I like both. Like, Chappelle's show, I think, has more like memorable kind of sketches, so I'd probably go with Chappelle's show, but like both are good.
Yeah, they're both good. Get Out, that's the winner.
Also, yeah, see Get Out. It's ridiculous. I've seen it twice now. So freaking good. Next question, also from Edward S. Dot. Non-Leafs, most iconic Toronto sports star?
Carter.
Like, of all time, you think?
Or are we talking about non-Leafs division?
Yeah.
So who? What? There's the Raptors. What are the other candidates here?
I guess you're looking at Vince. I guess you're looking at Lowry, DeRozan. I guess you're looking at Josh Donaldson, Jose Bautista. I think it's Jose Bautista. But the bad flip.
Yeah, that's tough. Because you also could have like. God, the home run guy. I don't live there, I'm sorry.
Joe Carter?
Yes.
Yeah, you could. So if we're going current...
Carter could be either of those guys.
If we're going current, I think it's absolutely Jose Bautista.
Yeah.
With maybe DeRozan, like, a second place, because people seem to really love DeRozan. Like, I love DeRozan, too. I still think Lowry's better, but DeRozan seems to be sort of more marketed as the Toronto guy. And Josh Donaldson is a wonderful and insane human being as well, so that's cool, too.
Yeah, I think we need like 5 years from Bautista and Lowry's retirement to gauge this correctly. I think for me right now it's Vince Carter because you have only positive memories at this point, and he did so much for the game.
There's only positive memories of Vince Carter?
Sorry?
You said there's only positive memories of Vince Carter?
Yeah, at this point. I mean, he gave up on the team, but they sucked anyway, so who cares?
It's true, I guess. I don't know. I still think Jose, like, I mean, he might be the best position player in Jays history. And he stuck around this year. He has the bat flip. He has a lot of really big home runs. He has the two home runs in the Royals game that they lost in game 6. I don't know. I think it's Jose, but Vince is a good guess, a good pick as well. Next question comes from, actually, that might be it. That's it. We're all out of questions. Now the rest of my mentions are just crazy ass Boston fans. So, we're going to come back to the other side, I guess, and we're going to get to your episode sponsor. I don't know who it's going to be. Do you have any suggestions, John? Okay, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Wilde here with John Godis, wrapping things up here with your episode sponsor. This week's episode is brought to you by, as we teased before, coming out of the break, or going into the break, Marcus Banks, who played 31 games for the Raptors over 3 seasons, averaging 4.2 points, 1.1 assists, a rebound a game as well, in just 9.9 minutes. What a bizarre run he had with the Raptors for a very long time. He left the league after his last season with the Raptors. He had some like kind of okay moments. He had 40 games with the T-Wolves in what year was this? 05-06, where he averaged 12 points and 5 assists a game. Not bad.
I actually think I remember that.
Yeah. He played for Phoenix. He was on some of those good Phoenix teams as like Nash's backup, like behind like Eddie House and stuff.
Oh god, yeah.
So, yeah, shout out to Marcus Banks. We're going to play that random Raptors game. I don't have any memories of him. Do you?
Nothing beyond what's in this little caption here.
Yeah, just the fact that he played for that long and, was on the roster for 3 years and only played that's like Bruno level almost. Like, being on the roster for that. I wonder how many minutes he actually played. What did he play? For the Raptors in total, he played 306 minutes. Bruno Caboclo, NBA. I have a feeling he's gonna have more minutes than Bruno, but let's see here.
Bruno's played like 100, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's not many at all. Yeah, so far
Bruno's played how many minutes this year? Like he's played like what 8 minutes or something this year?
That, yeah, no, he's played 89 career NBA minutes. So,
oh my god.
Yeah, he has 23 minutes this year. I think we made some over-under bets on Bruno that
8 minutes here. Wow. No.
What's that?
What? No, never mind. Oh. 23 minutes here.
Yeah, over 8 games. He's
Yeah.
Remember when the Raptors were blowing teams out all the time earlier in the season? We got lots of nice Bruno time where he didn't do anything. God, just 3 points on 1 of 3 shooting this year. Bruno. Actually, Bruno, I'm still in on, but we can save that for another day. He's been fine. His defense is a real thing, so look forward to that. All right, we're going to pull up Marcus Banks's...
He's coming.
What's that?
He's coming.
He's absolutely coming. Hold on here. I'm trying to pull up Marcus Banks's best game with the Raptors. I lost it. This is not a good game, by the way. I always like it when the best game of a guy is like a terrible, terrible loss. And that's what we have. I think it's a 24-point loss to Houston. So, hold on. I guess I can edit this part out where I'm just dead air, but I don't really care. All right, so the Raptors played the Houston Rockets on March 1st, 2010, and they got their asses handed to them. They lost 116-92, moving them to 31-28 on the season. The Rockets went to 30-29. And, yeah, this was not a good game for the Raptors. And this is a hell of a box score for the Raptors. Good Lord. Marcus Banks led the team in scoring in this game with 15 points. He had 4 steals, 4 assists, 3 rebounds, 5 of 7 from the field, and was a plus 2 in this game. By all accounts, the best Raptors player in this game. There were a total of 12 Raptors to suit up in this game. It is dark. What do you
got? Okay. What's the date again?
March 2010. The Rockets team, by the way, the starting lineup was Kevin Martin, Aaron Brooks, Chuck Hayes, Shane Battier, Luis Scola. And the bench was Chase Budinger, David Anderson, Garrett Temple. Garrett Temple was in the league in 2010?
I guess so.
That's fucking crazy. Jermaine Taylor, Jared Jeffries, Jordan Hill, and Hilton Armstrong. Also, bad team.
This is pre-Bosch trade, so is Bosch there?
He's not. I think this would have been when he was injured, with the face thing.
Or whatever. Darn, okay. Yeah. Bargnani?
Yeah, Bargnani played in this game. He had 28 minutes played, 14 points, 6 rebounds on 6 of 17 shooting, on a minus 29.
All right. Turkoglu?
Yeah, he started. He played 15 minutes. He had 4 points, 1 assist, 1 rebound on 1 of 5 shooting, 0 of 2 from deep, and a minus 16.
Calderon.
No Calderon in this game.
Okay. Jared Jack?
Yep, he started. He played 24 minutes, 11 points, 6 assists, 1 steal, 4 of 8 from the field, and a minus 26.
Okay. DeRozan?
Yeah, DeMar. Oh my god. This is a far cry from what he is now. DeMar played 15 minutes. He started. He had no points, 1 rebound on 0 of 2 shooting, and a minus 15. Wow.
Okay. Sonny Weems?
Yep, he came off the bench. 23 minutes, 8 points, 1 steal, 4 of 8 shooting, minus 18.
Okay, how many do I have?
You have, you're 5 of 5 now on your picks. Like, holy shit. You're on a really nice run. Plus, you have Marcus Banks, so that's 6 of the 12. You're only missing right. 6 guys.
Amir?
Amir came off the bench as well. 13 minutes, 2 points, 1 steal, 1 assist, 1 of 2 from the field. You are South Carolina-ing this game.
I swear to God, like I sometimes when I play this game, when it's just me on the podcast, I'll just cheat. I'm not cheating right now. Like I'm just getting it.
Well, this is impressive.
Okay.
So you got one starter. And 4-5 bench guys left. Four bench guys. 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 bench guys and one starter.
Nesterovich?
Yeah, he started. 22 minutes, 2 points, 2 assists, 1 of 3 from the field, and a minus 20. There were no good stat lines in this game.
Oh my god. Okay, bench guys. I think I need his point.
What's that?
I think I need hints at this point.
Okay. There was... okay. One of them is a wing. He might have played for a team within the Raptors division as well. It was like a mid-first round pick. There's one guy who's still in the league. Who plays for an Eastern Conference team got traded at the draft last year.
Ah, I didn't get any of that.
Oh, you didn't hear that?
No.
Okay.
It must have cut out.
Okay, no, sorry. One of them is a former Raptor, obviously. He plays in the Eastern Conference now, still in the league, and was traded at the draft last year.
Oh, God. Traded at the draft last year.
He was a guy that I was like kind of interested in the Raptors getting at the deadline.
I have no idea.
Italian guy.
Oh, Bellinelli?
Correct, yes. Bellinelli played 17 minutes, had 11 points on 3 of 9 shooting, and was a plus 4. We have a plus. 3 bench guys left. One of them had a really weird stretch where he got a lot of rebounds. And was very bad at everything else.
Oh, God. I don't know.
Has played for literally everybody.
Reggie Evans?
Yes, he played 24 minutes, had 10 points, 5 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, 3 of 5 from the field.
What a shitty game for Reggie Evans. I feel pretty good. He's got that's a good line for him. 10 points. Is that his
career high in points and field goal percentage, maybe? So you've got one wing and one really, really shitty big man. Who I believe played college basketball with Steph Curry.
The wing played basketball with Steph Curry.
No, the big did. I think.
Oh. Andres Biedrins?
No.
Aaron Gray?
No. He's a guy who probably, like, from the sounds of his last name, would, like, love St. Patrick's Day.
O'Shanahan?
Close.
O'Keefe?
No. No.
O'Malley?
Also, he did not play with... he also didn't play at Davidson. He played at Bradley.
Oh.
And did not play with Steph Curry. Patrick O'Brien.
Oh, okay. I would have never gotten that.
Yeah, he actually led the team in plus-minus in this game. He played 8 minutes, 2 points, 3 rebounds, 4 blocks, and a plus 6.
Interesting.
One of one from the field. And there's one wing remaining. I think I'm going to screenshot this box score and just tweet it out as an example of why the Raptors shouldn't blow it up.
Okay, who's the
Antoine Wright.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Antoine Wright played 25 minutes. He had 13 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist on 5 of 10 shooting. The only Raptor outside of Bargnani to put up double digits in shot attempts in this game.
Yeah, this is your future. If we got Bruno out there.
What a bad team. Oh, my God. Garbage team. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of The Headquarters. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. And apologies if John's audio was a little less pristine than usual. It still, I think, is fine. But there was a couple instances where he cut out a little bit because Dauphin, Manitoba don't have good Wi-Fi.
That's right.
Yeah. So thanks so much for listening. Anything coming down to the site for you, John?
I'm taking over the Wednesday question column, and we're starting with the should the Raptors want to play the Cavaliers in the second round tomorrow, and that's about it for now.
Awesome. So check that out. You can check out my daily podcast, Locked On Raptors, on the Locked On NBA iTunes channel network. You can find the show on its own iTunes page as well. Leave a rating or a review. We'd appreciate that. You can do that as well with our show here, The Headquarters. It's also on iTunes. Please leave a rating or a review. Would very much appreciate it. We're going to be back next week with another episode. And until then, take care. And here's hoping Kyle Lowry's on his way back by then. Thanks, John.